Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The podcast has doubled its ring count since last time. I am back, and I have grievances, Carter. How's it going, man?
Cool marriage brag, Justin. It's going good.
Hey.
Congratulations.
Ain't no thing. I had a lot of first and second round exits, but in the championship round, I'm undefeated, so I'm pretty happy about that. I'm happy to be back. I'm happy to be talking about the Cavs. And I made a point of listening to the last podcast today before we were listening, and I got some grievances. There was not enough Kevin Love excitement.
Well, I'll say this, man. Dave just kept like talking about them trading him, and I didn't really think they were going to trade him, but like,
you should have jumped down his throat.
I couldn't talk him off.
I love Dave.
I tried.
I love Dave. He's one of our best guests, but there is no way in hell that Kevin Love gets traded at the deadline this year. I just can't see it. I think the franchise has made a decision to kind of make him the face. And for whatever it's worth, like, the whole thing is interesting to me, and I've had all these takes balled up because I've basically been avoiding all sports media and everything as I was gone for 2 weeks. So I got Kevin Love takes. I think it's great that the team extended him. Obviously, I advocated doing so before the year. I agree with the points that you made that the team can still be bad. But what I honestly think is going to happen is that they go into this year and say, all right, let's figure out what we have. We're going to give it 110%. We're going to go all out. And if things aren't going well, I think you're going to see a bit of a fire sale. But they're going to give the team a chance to be competitive and to go all out. Ultimately, I'm not incredibly optimistic. But recently, they just came out with the Vegas lines for where they expect the Cavs. And they're at 30.5. Now, rather than doing an over-under, if I told you that you could bet that it would fall within four games, so within 34.5 or 26.5, and you could either bet inside of that or outside, what would you take?
Ooh, you know what? I'm going to say inside. I actually think it's a good line.
I think there's no chance. I think there's no chance that it ends up near that number.
Really?
It's either going to be much higher or much lower. Like, I think that there's the possibility that they can play 500 basketball with Kevin Love. But if he goes down, let's say you're 30, 40 games into the season and he goes down, that team's just not going to be competitive. And I think Dan Gilbert has experience. The front office has experience. Kobe Altman was there during the past regime. I think everything gets teared down. But if they come out and they're, for whatever reason, Colin Sexton exceeds expectations, Larry Nance plays really well, Tristan Thompson's healthy, and they're actually competitive, I see them going with that. And I don't think that there's necessarily anything wrong with that, especially when you got season ticket holders that all renewed and were forced to make a decision on whether or not to renew prior to LeBron making a decision. I don't, even though it's not ideal from a franchise building perspective, I think that there is some value to just being a competitive team. So I think they're going to make a read mid-season here.
Yeah, I think I'm just lower on the ceiling than you. I think that's what this comes down to, and I think that's why I'm more comfortable going on the inside as opposed to the outside. Is, you know, I think this team's ceiling is about 35 to 37 wins, and you know, that might be enough to make the playoffs in the East, by the way.
God.
But
yeah, you might be right.
I don't see a world in which this team is a 500 or a better team. I just don't. I think that the talent is too low and too disparate and a little mismatching. You know, I think Sexton Love is a good combo, but the wing is weird. The bench at the wing is a disaster.
It's weird for a team with so little top-end talent to really still have log jams at like multiple positions and be in need of some consolidation.
Yeah.
Like it's funny that you just have so many wings that you're like, I just don't know what to do with them. Like, I think there's a very good case for George Hill to start at shooting guard. I think he's always played best off a primary ball handler, and getting Sexton that experience is going to be valuable one way or another. But then you have potentially Rodney Hood. You have Jordan Clarkson, you have J.R. Smith, you have Kyle Korver right now, you have Jetty Osman, you have David Nwaba, who I was very happy about that signing.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to talk about the Nwaba effect yet, which is exciting as we took a week off. Yeah, it's a weird thing. Like, I mean, they just traded for Sam Decker. You know, I'm not sure that guy's an NBA player. I don't think he knows. Yeah. but, you know, that's it for them at the backup three and backup four spots. And if we're expecting Kevin Love to miss his customary 20 games, ruh-roh. You know, I think there's a world in which we're looking at, you know, Channing Frye spot starting center next to like Larry Nance at the four.
But that's my thing. I think that if things start to go bad, they're going to make sure that it is considerably worse than that line.
But 26 like, is not very many wins, Justin.
I'm point. Aware of that.
Like, I don't think that this team is going to finish much worse than that.
I mean, last year, Chicago Bulls finished with 27 wins. I think that's
this team is not going to be range. Worse than last year's Bulls.
It might be. If Kevin Love misses 20-plus games and you move the veterans, there is not a lot of experience there. We don't know, as weird as it is to say, we don't know if Tristan Thompson's going to get healthy and stay healthy again or what his role is going to be with his team. It seems pretty evident. Joe Vardon talked about this. And it seems like he's been kind of very in touch with Clutch and their players. And him indicating that J.R. Smith just doesn't have a role with this team, I think that's the perception J.R. has. I think that he believes that he's going to be moved or isn't part of the plans. So as much as J.R. can be a hit or miss player, that's another veteran. So if you're moving on from him, if George Hill isn't going to be there, if Kyle Korver isn't there, if Kevin Love's missing 20-plus games, this is an awful team. It's a very young team that's going to be trying to give Sexton NBA experience. It's going to try to be developing Jetty Osman as a ball handler. Like, I think that they can play competitive basketball, and you can still have a team that looks like a basketball team, a la the Brooklyn Nets last year, but there just isn't a lot of talent if those veterans aren't there. So that's why I can see that team being 20 to 25 wins or 35 to 40 if everything miraculously breaks well.
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny that you're optimistic on the ceiling. I'm pessimistic on the ceiling. I'm optimistic on the floor. You're pessimistic on the floor. But, you know,
I don't think there's a lot of middle ground here with this team. I just really don't.
I just think they're going to settle in as a mediocre team. Like, that's the middle ground, is being a 32-win team. And, you know, I think that's kind of what they're going to be unless they make some pretty wholesale roster changes. I mean, you know, they took a flyer on Decker. It does feel like this team for, you know, this is the kind of team that when you take over them in a 2K franchise, you immediately make four trades before you start.
Yes.
And that's not how real life works. But it kind of feels like this team needs multiples. Like, they need to find a suitor for JR. They need to find a suitor for George Hill's contract, because those are two positive assets for them.
And probably Kyle Korver, too. And like, those non-guaranteed deals. Well, I think if you're betting, the odds are that George Hill is going to be on the team to start the year. And I think your observation 2 weeks ago there was accurate, that I think there's a really good chance that he starts alongside Sexton. I think that that's kind of a nice little mentorship role. It's going to be weird because I really do think that they're going to come out at the start of the season thinking, okay, we can surprise people. We can be a playoff team. And that's what they're going to be aiming for. And then based on how that first month or two goes, the front office is going to make decisions from there. And I certainly get the skepticism. And if I'm putting money, I would definitely bet the under. But I think that there is some value in having these young guys, because it's not like in 2010 or 2011 there, where you just had absolutely nobody with promise. You have some promising young players, and for them to try to develop some good habits and for winning to be the goal early on, I think that that's a really, it's a positive, and it's going to be a positive for the fans who haven't seen the team try in the regular season, basically in the last 4 years. So I don't think that they're going to be very good, but I think starting the year, with and good intentions and aiming for the playoffs is going to do them some good, even if it's for nothing.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to that. On a slightly different note, would you trade JR to Houston for Ryan Anderson and a first-round pick? Ryan Anderson is owed $20.4 million this year, $21.2 million next year.
Oh, my God.
It's a tough one. It's a toughie.
It is a tough one because first-round picks are very valuable. And
but not Houston's.
I know, but still. Yeah, I would certainly think long and hard about it because you have to wonder about the opportunity cost, right? Even though you're not going to be a player with probably the first two tiers of free agency, you still can add players that might help and help with a Kevin Love built team to help accentuate his strengths and limit his weaknesses. And Ryan Anderson does neither of those. He is basically a bootleg version of Love. And from a basketball sense, like he just doesn't make a ton of sense. I'd think long and hard about it. I would really explore trying to find other options for Ryan Anderson. But then if you're moving Ryan Anderson to third team, you're probably going to have to include that pick that you're getting from him in the first place.
Yep.
So I don't know how productive that
stops
is.
Stops being worth it.
Yeah, but at the same time, you have to wonder if it's worth it to have J.R. Smith in this locker room.
Yeah, I'm worried about that. There's no way around it, but I still think you need to find a way to extract positive value out of it. And, you know, the problem with the Houston situation, I think Mort was talking about this on Twitter, the Rockets don't have anyone to tempt you with, really, from a roster standpoint.
They really don't.
You know, they can throw in that first and a young player. What is that? I mean, D'Anthony Melton looked awesome at Summer League. But, you know, what does that mean? But then it's just
probably not a whole lot.
But then it's just a bunch of guys who are older or suck. You know, Juki, like, who cares? Like, I don't need that guy in my team.
There's just nobody that you can add to Ryan Anderson and the pick to be like, okay, well, at least this is a bit of a flyer. Yeah,
it's literally just D'Anthony Melton, who was really good at Summer League. It must be said they might have found someone, but and you know what, Justin, it is worth saying this, like if it's midseason and he looks pretty promising, like as the team's backup point guard, go for it.
And that's the thing, like,
but like
I really do think at midseason those non-guaranteed contracts, the three non-guaranteed contracts that we're always bringing up, I think that's when they start having a little more value. And we've already talked about the value that they can bring on the court early in the season. But if it's still not working out, you have those non-guaranteed guys. George Hill, I think there's a lot of teams that could benefit from him as a mid-season addition. Maybe J.R. Smith, as you said, if Melton looks promising, maybe that becomes a little more
palatable. But, I mean, that's a pie-in-the-sky kind of situation. And even then, he's a point guard. Like, you don't really need that as a, like a long-term piece, but like, you know, I just can't shake the idea that that Dan Gilbert's going to be calling on Michael Jordan here pretty soon for more than just to talk about how much they agree about President Trump's tweet.
Woof.
Just kidding. To talk about some of these terrible contracts that the Hornets have and figuring out compensation.
What does Michael Kidd Gilchrist do for you?
Nothing. Like, but he's
absolutely nothing.
Nothing, dude. I don't care about him at all. He's nothing and nobody and never will be.
God damn.
He's just not good. He's fine. Got hurt a lot. Sucks. He can't be good. He's not going to be. That guy will never be a contributing player on a really good team.
He can play defense.
That's nice. It's 2018.
He's pretty good at that for a while. Thank you for reminding me that's 2018.
If he played power forward full time and could shoot like 30% from three, maybe. But he can't. I don't know, man. It's weird.
So you mentioned the Hornets. What's kind of your ideal dream package there?
I think you're looking to pick up Malik Monk and take a flyer on him and maybe a first. Other than that, it's funny. They've had a couple nice, higher picks, but none of them look that good. Like, I mean, Miles Bridges.
Would you rather have Monk or Bridges?
Probably Bridges, but I think they'd value Bridges higher because Monk has not looked that good. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they're willing to dump Bridges just to get off money. If they are, cool. Let's do it. It's a Michigan State guy, so Dan Gilbert will be happy.
I'm really interested to see how desperate they are to get off the Batum contract and Memphis to get off the Chandler Parsons. I know Dave brought up that they were willing to trade their pick that became Jaren Jackson to give up Parsons and get that money off the books. Now, they probably wanted a whole lot more than that, and he's definitely off the table now. But it'd be interesting to see, okay, so we're willing to take Parsons. What are you giving us in return here? It would be interesting to see what type of pitches they could put together. Like, I don't think there's a single team on the planet that's going to give up a 2021 first, even with decent protections. But I still think that you might be able to extract some value there.
Nick Batum is owed $76.7 million left on his deal.
That's absurd. At least he has Tony Parker now. Like, Nick Batum's not married, right?
I don't know. I hope not.
Well, as long as he's not married, I think that's going to work out really
well. They're French brothers, so they just get it. But, like, if you look at the money, the guys surrounding Batum on the dead money list on Spotrac.com, it's Levine, which, tough luck. But then it's Giannis, Steven Adams, and then below him is Aaron Gordon, Gary Harris, Rudy Gobert, Kyle Lowry, Vic Oladipo. Like,
that's the tier that I have him in my mind. So that makes sense.
Nick Batum is the only shitty player in the top 20 except Andrew Wiggins, who is 8. I'm sorry, the top 30. And even then, you have to get all the Tim Hardaway is owed $54 million still.
Imagine in 2014 someone was telling you about this Kevin Love extension, that he was going to be the last of the big three to survive in Cleveland. And with this extension, it's still going to be a better contract than the one Andrew Wiggins is on in 2018.
That's a tough look for old Andy. Wiggins is owed $146 million left. Kevin Love owed $144 million.
Kevin Love deserves every penny. He deserves good things. I'm so happy to have him around.
Yeah, I'm not mad about it. I don't know, man.
I'm that a sentimental contract, bastard on this one.
I'm just saying that Batum contract is approaching the most negative value for the, like, if you're like looking at how much of a contract is hurting the team that owns it, relative like to the fact that like the Hornets are not one of the more cash rich teams in the NBA in terms of ownership. Like, think about how crippling that is for them.
And especially because this is such a pivotal year for them. Like, they have the All-Star game, right? And this is a contract year for Kemba Walker. There's been a lot of talk that he might want to leave. They need to improve in a hurry. And that's just one of those contracts that's really, really stopping them from being better. And it's a shame because Nick Batum was a hell of a player. It just
got hurt a couple
times.
Did
not pan out for him.
The wrist injury messed up his jumper. He shoots like 30% from three now. I did think that was a guy that, you know, I do think there's a chance he finds it again on a good team. I really do.
I do as well.
But I just don't know what good teams are in a position to take that on without an outrageous expense or a real albatross coming back to Charlotte. So it just feels like that Charlotte team is a match made in heaven for the Cavs because they can take on some of that bad money in exchange for some draft compensation. And that's the rare situation as opposed to a lot of the teams where we've looked at maybe dumping some of these Cavs partially guaranteed guys where you could get a really good pick back.
Yep. You could get a decent pick back or at the very least one of those young players that we mentioned. Like there's things that they are willing and able or likely willing to give up in the right deal. And it's just one of the few matches that makes sense, whether it be from a pick or a prospect perspective, because I don't think those prospects are necessarily thought of as first or second tier prospects. And that's not the type of guy that you would get for J.R. Smith, George Hill, or Kyle Korver in exchange for salary relief as well. So I do think that that's a partner that probably makes the most sense. I haven't looked a ton into other options. I think Phoenix makes some sense as well for George Hill, because Phoenix is going for it for whatever reason. And Hill is a guy that addresses.
That's kind a of trade you want to do. You know, we talked about like how there are certain trades that will look that could look better at the trade deadline. That's one you do right fucking now before they realize yes. their team sucks.
Yes, yes. But before Trevor Ariza asks for a buyout midseason.
I love the tantalizingly talented duo of Booker and Ayton that's going to win 24 games, because they are talented. I'm not even talking shit, but they're not going to win games. And like,
hey, there's also Josh Jackson
who Josh Jackson sucks, man. Holy shit, that might have been a missed pick.
Man, He finished the year strong. Never forget that finishing stretch that every young player looks a lot better because teams stop giving a shit about lottery teams.
And also he shot like 37% during that stretch. They just let him shoot as much as he wanted, so he put up more raw numbers.
Hey, man, if he did that on the Lakers, they would be retiring his jersey already.
No, I think we have to be slightly barred from shitting on Lakers young prospects. In the short term, but as soon as these guys suck with LeBron, we're back, baby.
That sounds like a responsible take and a position to have, and I want no part of that.
Thanks, Justin. I'm proud of you. Nice to have you back. Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird spot for this Cavs team. They need to make some moves just to clear up room. Something we should talk about Nwaba, just because we haven't covered him yet.
Yes. The shooting guard that doesn't shoot but is still good.
Yeah, if you've never watched him, I think he, you know, the lazy, easy comparison that isn't so terrible is Tony Allen. Like a slightly better shooting Tony Allen. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah.
Not as like manic, though. I think that's important to note. Like Tony Allen was always like an adventure.
He's a power forward. Like,
I don't think David Nwaba is an adventure. He's solid.
If you're watching film, Nwaba, like the way he moves and like the type of shots he takes, you're like, oh, that's a undersized power forward, not a shooting guard. Like, he dunks almost everything, and he seems to really have an understanding of his role. And I think it's clear that the Cavs are kind of going in a direction where they're like, okay, Kevin Love is going to be the focal point of our team, and we're just going to start adding guys that try. Like Colin Sexton, he's a one and done rookie. He's not going to be a good defender year one, because those players just never are good defenders. But he has the tools to be a good defender, and he has the desire and the will. Like he's going to play hard every single minute. Nwaba's going to play hard every single minute. Tristan Thompson, if he's healthy, is going to do that. Larry Nance is another effort guy. Like Jetty Osman's another effort guy. Like, we're going to see a team that gives a fuck, and the talent might not be there, but I think that that's something that the city is going to be responsive to. And I get that that's kind of the typical, okay, blue collar grit and whatever, but I think it does actually have some value. Like, I think those type of teams have been endearing in the past to fan bases, no matter where they're
especially
located.
Especially in the regular season.
Yeah, and it's just going to be such a deviation from what we've seen in years past, because the trade-off has been we have a bunch of veterans that really don't care, and the regular season is just frustrating beyond all belief in exchange for success in the playoffs. And obviously success in the playoffs is not happening this year. Whether or not they make it, it won't go well if they do make it. But I think having young guys that you can watch, having a team that tries, even Kevin Love tries his ass off. Like, we'll see if that continues, but my hunch says that it will. And I think that that's a positive, and that's something that people can get behind.
Yeah, I there's a world in which we don't hate this team, and we've kind of hated this team for big stretches. in part, that's wired into our DNA as Cavs fans. I think there will always be a part of the fan base that just fucking hates everything that's going on. And they're always going to frustrate us.
That's the thing. There is nothing closer to hate on the spectrum than love. Like, those two are right there. They're right on the opposite ends of the horseshoe. They're so goddamn close. So you'll the things that you love are the things that drive you the most crazy. And yes, I'm married now, so I get to complain about that type of shit. But no, I do think that there is a possibility that this team is both loved and hated by the fan base. I think that there is actually value in developing an identity, because the Cavs haven't had one even with making four straight finals. It's been LeBron's team, and even though they're probably not going to be a contender anytime soon, the bar has been raised higher and higher on what a contender needs to be in today's NBA, and it seems like a pretty damn long road to get back there. Let's say this era turns into the Memphis Grizzlies, where they're a top four seed in the East for a few years, they're competitive, they have a couple nice long runs in the playoffs, like, I don't think that's the end of the world. I think that if you can start showing that you have a good process as an organization, you're a team that plays hard, that Tyronn Lue steps up and turns this into a team that looks like a well-coached team, I think there's some value in that. And you can start to build some equity behind the name Cleveland Cavaliers, and you can start to build from there. Like, you might not have the wholesale rebuild that a lot of people were rooting for, but I do think that there is value in that, and it can lead to future success rather than just bottoming out.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely works in theory. Not to be a buzzkill, but I don't really trust that this team's going to have a good process, because they haven't historically. David Zavak, former editor of the website we write for, said that, you know, someday, sooner, at some point, the Cavs are going to need a positive identity that does not involve LeBron James. And, you know, I'll believe it when I see it.
And that's what I'm hoping for.
It'll be cool when it happens, if it happens. You know, obviously it has to happen at some point through random chance and a lottery system. But I think that it's certainly, in theory, a fun idea. And, like, you know, I was just thinking as you were talking about that, like, remember how fun it was to upset teams in the playoffs?
Oh, yeah. First time around? For sure. And even really in the regular season.
Yeah.
Think of the Baron Davis lob to J.J. Hickson. Like, come on. We'll have moments like that.
First off, it was a lob to Alonzo G, but it's fine.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. God damn it.
What kind of...
J.J. Hickson had the block on Blake Griffin, right?
Yes, I think so. I watched that game. I don't know if I told you this story. I was in my ex-girlfriend's dorm room, and we were dating at the time. That would have been weird if we weren't. But I was in her dorm room. And
just breaking scandal on here. Okay. I see how it is.
But she didn't have a TV, so I just knocked on her next door, like her neighbor in the dorm's room, because I saw that the Cavs were finally about to win a fucking game. So I was like, Bonnie, I've met you once. Can I please come in and watch the rest of the Cavs game?
That sounds about right. That seems pretty up your alley. But yeah, you're going to have moments like that.
It was such a fun time.
Think of it this way. The Cavs, if they're competitive and if they're good, that increases their value, and it probably increases the likelihood that Dan Gilbert sells. If Dan Gilbert doesn't sell, we know his ego is still going to make him spend money on this team. So when he's spending a lot of money on this team, it may be spent very poorly or it may be spent well, but that accelerates the path. Like, you're not going to be in the middle, because the decisions are either going to be really bad or really good. And there's not going to be a lot of dwindling in that middle space there. So I think the Cavs are always going to be interesting for one reason or another. And ultimately, as a fan, like, I think that's one of the most important things, is you just want the team to be interesting and have storylines that you can follow and keep up with and can keep your interest beyond just the opening month of the season.
True or false, how fun this season is directly correlated with how good of an NBA player Colin Sexton looks like he can be.
Yeah, it's it's very.
If he sucks, which is possible, we don't know. If he sucks, it's like, oh no.
Well, if he sucks, you're probably picking fairly high in next year's draft. But then like, there's also
all of a sudden you're just like, oh wait, we can't draft this team. This organization sucks. Like I'll spiral so quick.
I mean, I probably wouldn't spiral that deep, but I can certainly see some people doing that. I think the plan B there would be how good does Jetty Osman look?
Yeah, yeah. But I think, I don't know, man. I'm a little worried.
You need some reason. You need some future reason to hope. Yeah. And you need one of those guys to look like they can be a quality starter.
I'm a little worried we're putting too much on Jetty's shoulders. I've been thinking about that. Like,
No. He's told me it's all fine. He knows. He knows what's happening.
I just want him to still get to just like I feel like Cavs fans think he can be an all-star. The way they talk about him. I do.
Oh no.
Like they don't I guess they wouldn't explicitly say that, but I think they're like in their minds thinking like, yeah, he could average like 16, 5 and 5.
Yeah. No, 16, 5, 5 and 5. Don't forget the five steals in there.
Well, why don't we just add another five and go full Kirilenko?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, the 5x5.
Catch the fever, man.
The 5x5 is the one 2K achievement that I've never been able to accomplish.
Really?
Yeah, I've never gotten a 5x5. I'll get five blocks, but I'll end up like four steals or three steals. Like, obviously, the rebounds and assists aren't hard if you're trying to do it.
While we're on the topic, like, do we want to talk about my softball game tonight, or do we want to keep going on with the cast?
Okay, mine was relevant to basketball and relevant to the point you just
made. Well, I want to talk about my softball.
Listen, this isn't like my kickball league. You don't understand. And your softball team probably didn't even miss you.
They did. They lost both games.
Tough luck.
They lost both games when I won't. Wasn't there, and we're undefeated. Oh, no, we lost one game with me in the lineup this year.
What do you play?
I'm both the pitcher and fuck you. All right. So the question I posed on Twitter was, if the Cavs exceed expectations this coming season, who do you think your perception of will change the most? Like, do you think how you view Kevin Love is going to change significantly? Would it be Tyronn Lue? Would it be Jetty Osman? Would it be the franchise as a whole and Kobe Altman and Dan Gilbert? Like, if you're looking into your crystal ball, who do you think would make the biggest impression on next year's team to put them over the top?
You know, I thought I was going to come out of left field with this one, but you listed it. I was going to say Lue. Like, I'll be impressed. I think Lue has one of the hardest jobs. Because not only does he have to completely build a system from scratch, because everything they did revolved around LeBron, he has to motivate a team that just lost LeBron fucking James.
Yeah, that's...
And
it was a team that had trouble being motivated with LeBron. Yeah,
and only really, like, I don't know, like they hadn't found a ton of success sans LeBron. So it's like, I think you're operating, like, I can't shake the idea that, like, these guys have played, a lot of the Cavs have been on the team for at least a couple years, so, like, all of their basketball rhythm is based on playing next to LeBron, because he's so all-encompassing, and I just can't shake that feels important,
I think for Kevin Love, it's going to be similar to like coming back from an injury when you're like not 100% yourself and you're still trying to figure things out and feel it out. Like I think that's the whole team playing with LeBron.
And like, So I think that's Ty Lue's challenge in a lot of ways. And
except for Rodney Hood, he never went through the trouble of trying to figure out how to play with LeBron. So he might be one step ahead of everyone.
Thank God for Rodney. I don't know. I think Lue has the challenge of one motivating himself and motivating the team. Like, I don't know, man.
I don't think motivating himself is going to be too much of an issue.
This goes back to the fact that this is why I would never be a good NBA player. Because if I were on the Cavs last season and then I were on the Cavs this season, I'd be like, you mean I got to get riled up for a January game against the Nets and it matters? fuck you. Like, I would be so depressed and indignant the whole time. I wouldn't want to try.
I'm really glad you have never been my teammate in anything other than this podcast.
Would you really be able to rev yourself up to shoot for 35 wins?
I get revved up for meaningless softball. I would get revved up. I'm revved up by nature.
I'm just saying. It's not as, I don't think it's as cut and dry as people think. Of like,
no,
I think there's a mental obstacle to overcome here that is not being accounted for. Like, my joke,
I think that's
going to
be a major issue with, I think that's going to be a major issue with Tristan Thompson. I think he's probably going to have the toughest time.
I think Chloe's going to have the toughest time.
You think Lou?
Chloe.
Oh,
like, what's her incentive at this point?
Child support.
Well, that's their, you know, in sickness and in health.
Well, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I think Tyronn Lue is a little bit sick of everything for a while there, like physically and emotionally. So I don't think he's going to have trouble being motivated. It's going to be interesting to see what the expectations are, because if the talent simply isn't there, I don't think you can hold it on either Kevin Love or Tyronn Lue that the win total isn't satisfactory and isn't enough to get in the playoffs. But I think there is still going to be signs to determine whether or not those guys are doing good jobs.
Yeah, like, well, to be clear, I would only learn that about like Lue if it goes well. I'm not really holding a bad season against anyone. By the way, what's your...
Well, no, I think...
What's your answer to that question, by the way?
My answer would also be Lou. Like, I think this is going to be the year that you find out a lot about him. There may be surprise candidates, but, like, if someone like Rodney Hood or Jetty Osman or any of... Larry Nance, like, if any of those guys take a big leap, I think it would be as a result of his coaching and the result of the systems that he's put in place. And I think... Even if the win total is low, I think you're going to be able to get a better idea of what type of coach Tyronn Lue is. Like, if they're like last year's Nets where, okay, that team is executing, they just don't have any finish because they don't have talent, I think that's going to be a good thing. If Kevin Love is still being used as a decoy and, like, you're just sitting there and you're like, none of these guys are being maximized, I think that's going to reflect really poorly on Lue. Like, I don't think the win total is necessarily going to be what determines whether or not he's a good coach and whether or not we're going to start giving him more credit than he had during the LeBron era. I think how the team plays is going to be really, really important. It's going to be really interesting to see if he can be a consistent motivator. And as much as I subscribe to what Mort preaches, that none of us know jack shit about coaches and what's really going into it, I think we still are going to see a little bit more because Lou really is going to have the reins. Like, I think the narrative that LeBron was the coach is a little overblown, but at the same time,
he defines your identity inherently.
Yeah, and he dictates the style of play so frequently, and it's really tough to be a motivational coach when your best player is completely checked out for the majority of the regular season. Like, that's just reality, and it was an organizational decision that they were okay with that identity as a team because they'd shown time and time again that they could flip the switch when it was needed.
I swear to fucking God, if he's playing center for the Lakers and is closing out hard on weak side rotations, I'm going to be so mad.
Over under, as we're in over under season, over under... November 1st for when LeBron says this is the toughest challenge of his career.
That's in the angle I thought you were going to go, but I love it. Season starts.
Like, I think that's going to be a training camp. That's going to be preseason.
I think it'll be an early December quote. Did you see what their over under was?
I did.
48.5. That's
yeah.
About right.
That's a line you can have for a basketball team, that's for sure.
It's I just want to see what happens. Like, I'm so excited to watch that team try to figure it out. Because if they do figure it out, that's even fun too. Like,
this is going to be such a weird, dramatic year. Oh, like, yeah. You have everything going on with the Lakers starting from scratch. you have the Warriors who were terrified. Like, you've heard a few people come out and say, yeah, we were a little concerned that maybe KD would walk this year. And that noise of him going to New York is going to be even louder. You got Kyrie posting on Instagram how he's the king of New York and nothing's like it. And that speculation is only going to continue. You got Jimmy Butler, and the Cavs have locked up Kevin Love. We are the stable team with a superstar, or at least an all-star. Man, the NBA is so goddamn weird, and it's going to be one hell of a fascinating season.
Yeah. What's the team you're most excited to watch?
I honestly am really excited about this Cavs team. I've already done the download the roster, next year's roster on 2K and stuff like that, and started playing around with it. But of course I'm fascinated by the Lakers. Everything about that experiment, it just seems so fascinating to me. The guys that they brought in, the intended roles that they have for LeBron, and all LeBron's quotes are saying the right thing, that he's going to continue to do it, and a lot of what we heard in 2014. But it's going to be interesting to see whether or not he starts demanding win now moves and changing things like he did in 2014, or if he understands that this just isn't a team that can win a championship no matter who they add midseason, and if he's a little more passive and just not as aggressive as we've seen in the past, which would be a really weird thing to see from LeBron. So that whole opera is just fascinating to me.
The Rondo Lonzo dance is really an interesting subplot there, because Rondo's still pretty good when he wants to be. And
I'm probably better than Lonzo.
And he is a prideful dude. But the Lakers cannot bench Lonzo for him. They cannot. They cannot tank their most tradable asset that might have positive value.
Well, no, that's Brandon.
Well, but Ingram's not when I say most tradable, I guess that's not the right way to put it, but the asset they're happiest to trade that also has positive value. Like, you know what I mean? Like a team could think that Lonzo would be really good for them and maybe give up good value for him down the line.
Teams are dying for pure point guards that are best off ball that don't shoot.
Well, you know, whatever. I actually like Lonzo.
I do too. I think he can be a positive player, but just not an all-star.
But I guess my point is, that's an interesting one. But I can't stop thinking about the Raptors. That's my favorite. That's my most exciting team.
Shout out to Daniel Reynolds. I met him, managing editor at Raptors HQ. He was in Winnipeg for a wedding. Met him last night. Cool guy.
Respect.
He was very adamant that the Raptors would not add Greg Monroe. And today they added Greg Monroe. So
sorry, Dan.
Read and follow Raptors HQ for all the insight.
And all the wrong Greg Monroe takes. But I don't know, man. I just think they're going to be fascinating because there's a couple of reasons I'm super interested in the Raptors. One, it's just we saw this team. We saw them do it pretty much the right way. And we all just acknowledged, they don't have a top 10 player. So sorry, you tried. They have one.
Yeah.
Hypothetically.
Yeah, they have the best player in the conference if he's healthy.
Unless
Giannis.
I wonder if Giannis is.
Did you see
now?
Giannis boxing? Hang on. I got to derail.
Yeah,
that dude's huge now.
Yeah, he's been yoked for a while. He got in that LeBron HGH program. But yeah, I just think this Raptors team is I want to see what this team looks like when they actually have a top end talent that finally makes sense, that doesn't have to make sacrifices to put their best lineups on the floor.
There's a lot less compromise with their roster nowadays.
That's what I like about them, is they can play their best lineups, and their best lineups don't involve you having to go, if they do that, then they won't be able to shoot, or they won't be able to defend on the perimeter, or they'll be small, or all these different, all of the things they want to do, they can do now. And that's really exciting. And
they just got to figure out what the hell to do with Serge Ibaka. And after that's resolved, then they're pretty much good.
And with apologies to one of our favorite basketball personalities, Andrew Sharp, am I crazy for thinking the Wizards aren't going to be that bad?
You're not.
I think they're going to be pretty fucking good. I think Dwight Howard is better than Marcin Gortat.
Okay. Gear down. Easy with the pretty fucking good.
They're going to be better. Weak
Eastern Conference, if they're healthy, they can have a decent finish.
They won 43 games last year. And they hated each other so much. And
Dwight is going to make them love each other.
Well, my theory is that at some point you reach hating each other critical mass. And you saturate your hatred.
But what's going to happen to them when Markieff leaves midseason in a trade to go to LA, because Markieff and Marcus signed with Clutch. So they're destined to be the Lakers' midseason moves.
You can't rule it out. I don't know, man. I just think like they just got a bunch of guys who don't have good reputations but are not terrible basketball players. Like Austin Rivers, everyone hates him, pretty good at basketball. Dwight Howard, everyone hates him, definitely. Put up a 30-30 game last year.
But everybody hates everyone on that team, and they hate one another.
And like, that's why I think it's going to be fascinating. I really think like you can like your locker room can only be so toxic.
Like if you're Scott Brooks, do you walk in there and say, "I know you guys all hate each other. If you play really well together as a unit, you might play your way off this team."
Well, the only
and then
way
they just go out and win 68 games is that what you're predicting?
Well, the only way they like each other is if they win. Because everyone likes each other when they win, for the most part. It's only, like, negativity.
Unless you're Kyrie and LeBron. Well,
but, like, the negativity would come out after a losing streak. But I think this team is suddenly... I think if you look at their composition, they make sense.
And plus, now that Lowry and DeRozan are gone, they can strengthen their claim as the best backcourt in the Eastern Conference on Wednesdays and Fridays.
I don't know, man. I think they're going to be a top 4 seed in the conference. Am I crazy?
Man,
it's a shitty conference. I mean,
there's so few teams that you actually can feel confident with. That one surprised me. Like I think Philly's going to take a little bit of a step back this year. Like they lost a lot of what made them tick, and I think there's going to be an interesting thing. Well, I mean, a lot is obviously riding on Fultz and whether or not he is as good as
he should
be.
Who did they lose that made them
tick? He should be really good. But there is also
what did they lose that made them tick?
As bad as it is to say, Ilyasova and Bellinelli, like,
they mattered for sure.
Guys, yeah, they lost shooting.
Yeah, they did.
And I think that matters.
I think that's fair. Yeah, but I mean, they're still going to be a top 3 seed just by default. You know, I think the top 3 stay the same.
What do you think of the Central Division? Like, Indiana's probably the clear best team in the division. What's your read on your former hometown of Chicago?
I don't know if the word clear factors in. I think NBA Twitter's been like weirdly all in love with their offseason. I think their offseason's been kind of shitty. Yeah, Tyreke Evans, 1 year, $12 million. I'm sorry, I just don't believe in Tyreke Evans.
Like, it's not great, but if you're looking at the division,
yeah, that,
the only
I
other
guess what
option
I'm saying
is
I think they're due
is Detroit with Dwayne Casey now.
I don't know. Milwaukee picking up Bud.
Oh yeah, I forget Milwaukee's in the Central. Okay, yeah. So Milwaukee
it's
has
a
two-team chance.
Race between Milwaukee and Indiana. I just think Indiana is due just a little bit of regression, and I don't like Doug McDermott. I don't love Tyreke Evans. I think Tyreke Evans is just like an empty stats all-star. I don't think he plays off ball very well. Like, even when you looked at his like out his three-point numbers that got way better last year, it was all off the dribble.
And Collison was low-key like really damn good last year, like really effective.
Well, that's where you lose me, because I actually always think Darren Collison's good. I think he's a really good player.
Well, no, I'm just saying that having Tyreke Evans has taken the ball out of his hands, and I think he was pretty unheralded last year.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then like Kyle O'Quinn, like NBA Twitter loves him because he's like kind of efficient and has a big beard. I just don't see it. I don't see so much growth that it's gonna overcome just natural regression. And Maybe I'm wrong and Miles Turner gets a lot better. I mean, he's a young guy. Like, I think he just had his age 22 season, so he's still got a lot of room for growth, and it looks like he's really worked on his body this summer. But that just doesn't feel quite... I wouldn't lock them in there. I think Milwaukee with Bud, that's the other team I'm really looking forward to see, because Milwaukee is a funny team because everyone in NBA Twitter just loves them, loves all their players for the most part. Like, they love Brogdon. They adore Middleton, and they should. He's awesome. They love Giannis.
Yeah, I'm part of Middleton.
Interested by Maker. They have guys that NBA Twitter is interested in and think are pretty solid, and I think that's mostly fair. Bledsoe is obviously, like, disappointing, but whatever. I like Brooke Lopez. Like, but we've seen, like, these guys just underperform every year, and we're all pretty fucking sure it's because of the coaching. And this is like a great money where your mouth is season, where it's like, all right, you got Budenholzer, who is one of the better at the least regular season coaches. Go be great. Right. And I think if they're not at least consistent, if not great, but good, because this is a team with enough talent to be good.
I'm really interested with both them and Detroit, because those are the two teams that the consensus on Twitter was they needed upgrades in the coaching department. And it'll be interesting to see what Casey does in Detroit, because I think they do actually have talent. And it'll be interesting to see what Bud does in Milwaukee, because I think this is the make or break year for Milwaukee, because if this doesn't go as they hope, I think you start every GM in the league. I'm sure they've already started, but they start planning even harder for Giannis.
Yeah, well, I just think this is like the... this is the season because we have a guy that we know to be a good coach in. We know to be a good coach. This is the, all right, if they're still not good, maybe it's start time to think about this core. About these guys that we think are good, but we're wrong all the time. And, you know, maybe Chris Middleton isn't quite as impactful as we want him to be. Or, you know,
You keep his name out of your mouth.
I love him, so I hope I'm wrong, but it's just one of those. That's the kind of team that'll catch my eye.
And maybe they need George Hill. maybe that would.
I'll give him a nice Kyle Korver for Matthew Dellavedova and a first round pick.
Oh man, speaking of the grit brigade, that would. There would be so many jokes, but I'm also here for it. I will always have a soft spot for Deli, which shouldn't surprise anybody.
Yep, he can be our 15th man whenever he wants.
Oh, boy. Well, we should probably wrap it up. You doubted whether or not we could get a half hour content, and we're up over 53 minutes here. So,
hell yeah.
The joke's on you. The content game never sleeps. Especially when you have a team as interesting as the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Well, we just missed each other, Justin. That's what it comes down to.
Well, don't make me say it. I want to thank all our listeners. Want to thank all our listeners. Remember to support the show, whether it be the old school way of going on to iTunes, going on to whatever app that you use to listen. Leave a rating, review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Tell your friends and families about the podcast. Or if you want to make a monetary difference, you can also support on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/chasedownpodcast. We appreciate any donations. The podcast will always be free, but you guys really do help with the overhead, and we have a lot of fun with the Patreon only Discord chat. And so if you want to be a part of that, support us on there. But we will now continue with the weekly podcast throughout the summer. Might mix in a few guests and stuff like that if the content game with the Cavs is a little lean. But the NBA offseason is really short, so I have a feeling that we'll have a lot to talk about. There's roster moves that need to be done one way or another, so they'll continue to be interesting and relevant. So thanks for me, thanks for Carter, and until next time, go Cavs.